Support for Commodity Week Online comes from Strategic Farm Marketing, now offering a fall look-back option that will add 50 cents per bushel to your revenue claim. Details at sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded the 24th day of January 2014. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists today on the phone lines are Aaron Curtis of Midco Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Elaine Cubb from Mastering the Grain Markets of Elkhorn, Nebraska, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois. In studio with us, our special guest today, Steve Freed. He's the Vice President of Research at ADM Investor Services in Chicago, Illinois. Let's begin our discussion this afternoon, Aaron Curtis and Elaine and Bill, with this question. As you look forward into the month of February, what are your hopes for the setting of insurance prices for commodities, and how high or low do you think it will go? We'll start with you, Aaron Curtis.
I still think we're going to be somewhat range-bound moving forward here, Todd. You just really look at the horizon, you wonder what kind of news we're really going to see here moving forward, especially on corn prices. We've stuck in a fairly broad range here for the short term, and we've had some, you know, friendly news with the export sales continuing to stay on pace. The grind numbers for ethanol continue to be somewhat friendly here, but you know, the producer still holds a large share of corn, and you know, I still go back to some historical sense here where the producer still holds that much corn. It's just going to be hard to rally futures too much, and I think that's why we continue to see future somewhat range-bound. I think that'll continue here as we move forward into February, Todd.
Elaine Cubb, your view?
Well, I've been a little bit, I've been trying to be a little more aggressive because we're earlier in the year. So as far as pre-market hedging, I have not really been doing any of that yet. But you're talking about the insurance rates that are getting set in February. And I think, you know, it's going to be important for farmers and for all of us to sort of expectations pretty mild. If we got that December corn contract up to the 475 level, I think that would probably start to see some resistance in the market. So that would probably be the high end of an average that you could expect to see in during the month of February. And I think that the soybeans have established a pretty constant, or they've established a price ratio that they're feeling pretty comfortable at, right at that 2.5 to 1 price ratio. So to see the November soybeans go much above $11.50 or towards the $12 level would be sort of a surprise.
And Bill Mayer.
Well, as we've been doing some of our meetings and making projections here, Todd, we've kind of been looking at that $4.50 to $4.55 level on the December corn for the insurance price, and on the soybeans somewhere between 11 and 11 and a quarter. We've kind of been using the 11 quarter and the 4.55 levels just to, you know, as far as analysis, trying to kind of see where profitability is at and that type of thing.
Elaine, you are of the mind that we could average 475, you think, or not for sure?
No, I guess I don't. It's not my prediction. That's my hope.
That's your top
right?
end?
That would be the aggressive sort of goal for this. I think it would be surprising if the average through the month of February got that high. I think that would be sort of the high level of what you might expect to see throughout the month.
I know, Elaine, that you watch both the livestock and the grains. What do you think of the cattle on feed report as it was released Friday afternoon?
Well, I think, I mean, what an interesting confirmation of how tight the supplies are out in the countryside. As I'm sure you know, the fed cattle market reached another all-time high this week, and it was much more surprising than even we were expecting to see last week. You know, they reached an all-time high there, and then prices popped up $5 to $6 per hundredweight in the middle of the week because packers are so desperate to find that supply of fed cattle.
Yeah, cattle on feed, by the way, were down 5%. Placements were down 1%. Marketings were down 1% as well. So as you look at those numbers, Bill Mayer, and you think about usage and what that means as we go through the year, do the livestock numbers make a big difference to you at this time, especially when you put it back into the category of the grain stocks report released earlier in January?
No, I'm not sure that it does, and I think that marketings number kind of is linked. Alluded to there, that marketing number kind of tells you there wasn't a lot of cattle probably in the feedlots to market. And I think I guess I've been taking the approach, I think the feed number, and for that matter, the ethanol number probably as well, as you kind of look forward for the next probably year or more, 18 months anyhow, I think you're kind of looking at some pretty steady usage numbers when you put them on an annualized basis of somewhere, you know, right around where the USDA's got them here, $5 billion on the ethanol, and, you know, somewhere between that $5 and $5.7 billion or something like that on cattle or on livestock feed.
Aaron Curtis, since the beginning of the year there in Bloomington Normal, central part of Illinois, at the elevator system, how has movement been for corn?
I would say overall quiet. We did see some farmer interest after the crop report here mid-January. Todd, for that day and a half after the market reacted swiftly to the upside on corn by 20, 25 cents, we did see some producer movement. But since then, it's really quieted down here again. I think we need to see, you know, nearby futures kind of get back to that old top end of this recent range in that 435 to 440 area, maybe pick up a little bit of interest. Of course, as far as physical movement, of course, it still remains somewhat choppy with the weather. Producer, you know, somewhat reluctant to battle these cold temperatures and some of the snow. So that's been a little bit on the slow side. Elevator shipment has been able to pick up a little bit here after the initial cold weather we had earlier in the month. So catching up a little bit there. But for the most part, the producer just not a lot of interest with this corn continuing to trade sideways, Todd.
And of course, the cold weather does wreak havoc with the movement of grain in the Midwest. People don't like to get out, especially when it's as cold as it has been and will be next week. Does that mean you'll be expecting a little pop in the basis, Aaron, or not?
Well, SIF corn basis a little firmer for the week. Continue to see some issues along the Illinois River with ice. Looks like that's going to continue when you look at some of the cold temperatures we're going to see the first of the week again, Todd. So that's going to continue to be a challenge. So, you know, historically, basis continues to be very firm. And, you know, until we see, you know, a more steady increase of movement, better weather, and producer involvement, you know, basis, at least on the corn side, is going to continue to be somewhat firm and hang in there the way it looks.
Bill, I'm going to skip out of the corn and stay with the cold weather for the moment and maybe the dry weather as well. I'd like you to take and turn your attention to the Great Plains and the hard red winter wheat crop. It may be in trouble, I guess, from those two fronts, both for potential winter kill and for very dry conditions. What are you hearing, and what do you think about that potential for the new crop wheat?
Well, I'm not so sure from the dryness situation. You know, we've had quite a bit of press here recently about the California situation and that, but as far as crop areas in the plains, southern plains and that especially, I don't think you hear that much, but really that drought situation really hasn't left yet. I think we did see some concern this week as we see this violent ups and downs in the temperatures that were expecting to continue here, it looks like, for another week or so. And I think, you know, it didn't seem like we could rally the wheat off that, but at least maybe we've kind of stabilized it at this point.
Yeah, Land Cub, last year when we talked to you about this time, I think you were concerned about dry conditions on, actually not in 2012, I should say. You were concerned about dry conditions on the west side of the interstate that intersects across Iowa. Are you still concerned this year?
Well, I would be concerned if guys were going to try and get in the fields and get some seed started tomorrow, because when you look at the drought monitor, central Iowa is in fact still in a severe drought. But, you know, this is January, so, you know, this is the question that we should put to the meteorologist, whether or not we're going to see some good spring rains, get some changes in there. And that's also true for the southern plains, but again, this is January. You know, it's not really the time of year where we really need to be worrying about killing the wheat crop or really too worried about getting our new crop seed started here in the Corn Belt.
Oh, fine. Thank you so much. Turn your attention to South America then.
We do have an active pattern.
Yeah.
All right. So all of you take up South America and what the crops look like, because we have had dry conditions. We've had an awful lot of rain, but it's been really hot in Argentina. We'll start with you, Elaine.
Well, I think it'd be more interesting to see the corn market respond to Argentina's corn production. from what I can tell, you know, the soybean areas themselves have been getting, you know, they've been limping along, they've been getting by. Brazil has been getting enough rain that I don't know that we're, you know, that at this point we've seen enough of worry for the weather for the South American soybeans to justify any major rally. Obviously, as we saw this week, some risk premium coming back off of there. But going forward, if that Argentinian weather pattern continues dry, I'd be more interested in seeing the global corn ending stock numbers being adjusted from that.
Aaron Curtis?
That's going to be interesting to watch, like Elaine said here, what happens here as we move into February. Still some critical growing areas ahead in Argentina. I guess my argument still is that I know we've seen some detriment to some yield that we've, you know, dating all the way back into December. My argument would still be that some of the areas that have gotten rain and are more favorable are going to more than make up for some of the yield loss we're going to see in some of the parts of southern Argentina, especially when you're hearing some of the yields coming out of Brazil to this point, at least on the bean side. So I think South America as a whole is just going to be just fine as far as total yield output here as we head into the spring.
And Bill Mayer, what have you been hearing about the South American crops?
Well, I think these guys covered the corn side of things in Argentina. Brazil, I think the bean crop there looks to be, weather looks to be good, and the crop looks to be very you know, like we're going to have a very good yield there. I guess the question probably is, I think that we've talked about that, and I think that's in the marketplace at this point. You know, can it get bigger than what we're expecting at this point? I'm not sure it can. But right now we're kind of in this situation that we always get into South America, and we do it here in the United States too, as we anticipate this crop coming on, and, you know, it doesn't come on quite as fast as everybody thinks, and so we kind of back the market off, and then we see that it's not coming in. We get a little bit nervous, and maybe we've got some volatility, I think, in the bean market here for the next 30 days anyhow.
What do you think, if there's anything that's not in the marketplace that we should be watching for, Bill? Is there anything that's on your radar that maybe you don't hear much about at this point?
Well, I guess I'm not sure that there's anything that's, you know, not in the marketplace. I think, you know, it's pretty thorough. The market always has been. But I think the acres are going to be the thing, you know, planted acres here in the United States are going to be the real telling factor here as we move forward and, you know, the type of spring we have. And as we've been out doing some of these meetings, I've been kind of surprised at some of the willingness of some of the central Illinois farmers, for example, to be moving some corn acres back into the beans.
So you think they're moving from what, 55% corn to 50% corn, or are they doing a greater percentage move than that?
Oh, I don't know if it's big amounts or not here, but I guess it tells me that if we're doing that here, I'm not sure in some of the fringe areas where you can't raise 190 bushel corn, but you can still raise 40 to 50 bushel beans, you know, what the incentive is. It looks to me like the incentive economically is to maybe make some bigger switches.
Elaine, what do you hear from out west? I wouldn't call Nebraska a fringe area by any means. It's the number three corn-producing state in the nation. But you're close enough to South Dakota and some of the areas that the Dakotas that do count as fringe areas. Are they making a switch at all?
Right, and Bill very rightly pointed out that the yield ratios of corn to soybeans is different out in the western parts of the Corn Belt. So, yes, I think, especially up in South Dakota, I think that the seed salesman will tell you there was more willingness in November to be switching to more soybeans than to be keeping to more of a 50-50 rotation than you guys do there in the central Corn Belt. And the other argument I heard this week from a farmer that was considering switching to more soybean acres because he's worried about the availability and the price of propane if he's going to have to dry corn. So I thought that was sort of an interesting way to look at it. I think that nobody really cares too much about that price ratio of the November to December corn futures because it's too far in the future. But things like the input availability or just sticking with your ratio or what the weather allows you to do in spring, that will definitely keep that acreage proportion in play here.
And, Aaron, have you got any thoughts on the switch in acres, if that happens at all?
And not too much different. Just picking up from our elevator customers, stock producers, sounds like an overall just a slight switch to soybeans, at least in Illinois at this point. But, you know, most of them still come in, and it's going to come down to spring weather. And if the weather's good, favorable in April,
still going to be quite a bit of corn planted, and won't see nearly as much shift as maybe would have thought after the end of last fall, Todd.
Well, let's bring Steve Fried, the Vice President of Research at ADM Investor Services out of Chicago, Illinois, into the conversation. He's here in studio with us this afternoon. Thank you so much, Steve, for taking the time and coming to the studio. We do appreciate that.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
What's on your radar for the most part for both the corn and the soybean market at this time?
Well, each day before the market opens, I go through all the different news and wires that we get in, and I make a list. And today, I think top of the list was when the government of Argentina decided to float their peso.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the initial market reaction was that maybe this will encourage the Argentina farmer to sell beans. He's got 400 million bushels of beans left from last year's crop that he wants to sell. And up to this point, with inflation as high as it is, there hasn't been really that incentive. So from a market standpoint, Monday and Tuesday is going to be really important to decide how much U.S. dollars the government's going to allow individuals to buy, and just the spread between the black market price and the actual government price. And if that narrows, and if they give them a lot of dollars, the farmer in Argentina could sell a lot of beans on Monday morning. The next thing we're looking for is the currency markets, whether it was the Argentine peso, the Brazilian real. A lot of emerging market currencies really dropped a lot today. And I think that starts raising some concern about the demand structure in the market, and just what impact would a slow economy. We saw some Chinese data this week that was disappointing. What impact that might have on the demand side. So then we got the export sales data. And for beans and meal, they were a lot better than expected. I mean, any bean sales this time of year, especially when we've got commitments over what the USDA is forecasting for exports, is too much. And the market rallied on that. And I think that it was interesting. We did see the Chinese cancellations that were rumored, but Europe came in and bought beans and meal. And that might be a reflection of the concern about Argentina and whether or not they can get meal out fast enough for the Europeans. And then finally, as we got into the close, we rallied beans close to the 1280 strike price of the options that were expiring today. And so there were certainly a lot of moving parts in the markets. I think as far as 2014 is concerned, most of the analysts that I listen to and talk to say that this is going to be a different year for the farmer. This is a year about protecting your balance sheet, looking at break even, doing things you haven't had to do in the last 3 years. To try to protect your cost and your income versus the last 3 years where it's all been about maximizing your profits.
Well, we'll continue our conversation with Steve Fried and Elaine Cobb and Aaron Curtis along with Bill Mayer in just a minute here on Commodity Week. Just a reminder, if you are interested in going along with us on our Will Ag Follow the Corn bus trip to John Deere in Moline, that'll be March 10, 11, and 12 to watch the combines being made there at the harvester plant. We'd like to have you along. We'll also go to Waterloo, Iowa, and take a look at the tractor plant. Yeah, 2 days. Tour in the John Deere plants in Iowa and Illinois. You can come with us. You can find all the details on our website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. Just a bit more than $500 a person for the 3-day event. And it's pretty all-inclusive. I'd love to have you all along for that trip, but we do need to know by about the 9th day of February. That's kind of our go, no-go date to see whether we have enough folks to fill a bus or not. You can find all the details there again at willag.org for our Follow the Corn John Deere bus trip.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Here are the weekly changes as they come to us from the CME Group in Chicago. March corn at $4.29.5, finished 5.5 cents higher this week. December corn at $4.59.25, up 0.5 cent. March soybeans at $12.84.75, down 31.75 in November's. at $11.09 and a quarter, 15 and three quarters lower. The March bean meal at $4.25 and or rather $425.70, down $8.80. And March bean oil at $37.54. It posted, by the way, an outside down week, 20 cents lower. March wheat futures at $5.65 and a quarter, and the soft red up a penny and three quarters. July unchanged at $5.77. April live cattle finished at $140.10. They were up 80 cents, but off from their high, $3.10 this week. March feeder cattle at 168.87 and a half, or 95 higher on the weekly trade. And April lean hogs at $94.02 and a half, finished $2.12 and a half higher. Now here's meteorologist Ed Kieser with this week's South American weather forecast.
Rain did fall this week in key southern Argentina production areas, helping alleviate extremely dry conditions. Some rain also fell in dry portions of eastern Brazil. Focusing on Argentina first, important production areas of Buenos Aires, southern Cordoba, and La Pampa have generally been hot and dry during the past month, stressing reproductive crops. Showers and thunderstorms finally moved through the area Wednesday and again Thursday night into early Friday. Several locations picked up more than an inch and a few more than 2 inches. The heat wave also broke with a cold frontal passage on Thursday. Going forward, dry weather is expected this weekend into early next week. That will be accompanied by stress-free temperatures in the 70s and 80s. Starting in the middle of next week, temperatures will turn warmer again, but a prolonged period of excessively hot weather is not expected. Along with the warming comes an increased chance of needed showers and thunderstorms. Even with recent rainfall, moisture deficits in many southern Argentina locations are still 2 to 5 inches since the beginning of December. In Brazil, showers and thunderstorms fell this week in the dry areas of Goiás, Bahia, and Minas Gerais. That rain was important as showers will taper off after this weekend, and another prolonged period of dry weather starts next week and continues into at least early February. This part of Brazil produces about a quarter of the corn and soybean crop, so dryness in this area needs to be monitored. Rainfall deficits for the past month are 5 to 8 inches. As expected, it was a mostly dry week across South Brazil, Paraguay, and northern Argentina, and as expected, rain has just returned, and periodic showers and thunderstorms are in the forecast for the coming week. This area remains in the best shape for crop production in South America.
Our thanks to meteorologist Ed Kieser for his look at the South American weather. You can join him here each and every week on our programming. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media, from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
This is the January 24 edition of Commodity Week. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to Illinois Public Media. Our panelists include Aaron Curtis of Midco, Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets, and Bill Mayer from Strategic Farm Marketing. Our special guest in studio today, Steve Freed, the Vice President of Research at ADM Investor Services from Chicago, Illinois. Aaron Curtis, we'll start with you. Do you have a question for Steve?
Steve, I know you know that in our world, basis and spread world, kind of waiting for the producer to be a more active seller. We see nearby corn spreads continue to work in a little bit and basis continue to stay firm. Do you think, as far as producer selling, are we closer to that day coming, or do you think we're farther away? What's your opinion on that?
Well, I think that the corn farmer's got a lot of corn to sell. I think that he has money from the last few years, which kind of reduces some of his selling, and I think he feels prices are too low. So I think that on rallies he'll sell a little bit, but the bulk of the selling, I think he's going to wait at least until he sees maybe what the USDA says on February 21st for the outlook for 2014, but more importantly, maybe what the planting intentions are going to be in that spring weather.
Elaine Cobb, a question?
Yeah, Yeah, my question is a bit more global or sort of a macro view long term. You certainly mentioned that you watch the currencies from day to day, and we certainly saw this week how strongly wheat, for instance, responded to the big drop in the U.S. dollar on Thursday. So my question is, Steve, do you have a sense of more longer term throughout the year 2014? How do you expect the U.S. dollar to move? Is Fed policy going to affect that, and how will grains respond?
Well, I think that when you get economists together, they'll say a couple of things. Number one, they're looking for the U.S. economy to improve in 2014. When you look at all the major currencies, the Canadian, the Australian, I think they want their dollars lower, so that helps their export demand. So I think that the direction of the dollar is probably going to be higher. Now, there'll be ebbs and flows depending upon what, you know, Washington does and things like that, or what the happens out of Europe or what happens out of China, but I think most people think that the direction of the dollar is going to be higher. Now, most of our export demand in the grains, I don't think, is that sensitive to the dollar. I think that people will buy corn if they need it. The Chinese will buy beans if they need it. The wheat is going to be something more interesting. There's a lot of cheaper wheat in Black Sea in Europe than us, but we'll just kind of have to see what kind of global supply there's going to be. So I guess I would say that I think the dollar's going higher, but I don't know if that's going to really affect our exports or not.
And a question from you, Bill.
Yeah, kind of staying on the same line, Steve. There's some talk today, I know, around the marketplace, and we get that every once in a while as far as China's economy and that. What's your take on their outlook as far as their economy goes, and have we got red flags here that we should be looking out for?
Well, I think, first of all, I don't think anybody knows what the Chinese economy is doing or is going to do, including the Chinese. I think that they have some challenges with inflation. They have some challenges with some building debt. But their economy, as far as the Chinese are concerned, is going to continue to grow. Some economists feel that the biggest change in China was the Internet and the fact that they can see now what they didn't have before. And some of these people, you know, they just want carpet on their floors and drapes on their windows. And that's times a billion and a half people is a lot of consumer buying. So anyway, it's I think the economy in China is going to grow, but maybe not the pace that the market wants.
And as we close out our program, a very short word from each of you, maybe 10 seconds. A final word from Aaron Curtis at Midco.
Well, first of all, stay warm, but continue to watch nearby corn here as we move up to the top end of the resistance here that we've had recently up in this 435, 440 mark if you're looking to make some additional sales here short term.
Me, Elaine Cubb.
Definitely watch the natural gas and propane markets, and if you haven't already, be sure that you're confirming your inputs, that your chemicals and your energy are going to be available when you need them in the upcoming year.
And Bill Mayer.
I think this December corn, if you can get that up into the 460, 465 area, if you haven't covered your uninsured corn bushels for new crop, I think that's a good target price to look at.